Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 19, 2019. The head of South Sudan's revenue authority says it's time to get tough on corrupt government officials.
In February, the hard currency collection, we had $9.1 million. So you can see there is a significant increment between January and February. February, we had $9.1 million.
And some South Sudanese women accused the media of doing a poor job of covering women issues.
We have talked of the 35%. We have talked of the 50% they are demanding. We have talked of
army plan to cap sexual violence against women. Is this not a lead story? Which story do they want us to cover?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Revenue Authority says it has collected more than $9 million in February compared to $4.7 million last month. But the head of the National Revenue Authority says a few corrupt tax officials are still diverting significant amount of money to their private accounts. He says the tax body will start announcing the names of corrupt individuals who steal tax money and banks that facilitate the diversion of tax revenue. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Last month, the Revenue Authority said it collected more than £1 billion and $4 million since creating a block account to improve non-oil revenue collection. Olympio Atipo, the commissioner of the National Revenue Authority, told reporters in Juba today that while revenue collection is up, the tax body's local currency collection fell from £1.2 billion in January to £1.1 billion in February, which Atipo says is due in no small part to tax evasion.
In February, the hard currency collection, we had $9.1 million. So you can see there is a significant increment between January and February. February, we had $9.1 million as a collection, revenue collection, by the National Revenue Authority. But if you look at the statistics over there, the pounds has fallen. The pounds, we had £1.1 billion.
Atipo also says some tax officials are conspiring with commercial bank operators to divert tax revenue into their private accounts.
Yes, you are helping those people to divert those money. You, some of the banks, you are still doing that. We are aware. But it's going to be very unfortunate for you if you get all the documented evidence that we need and we will be holding the press conference like this to expose you and expose those people. Because we are going to be naming and shaming. That is the responsibility we have to collect money. We are going to be naming and shaming. You have the account, the secret account I'm talking about. Some of you, the bank, you have the account. And I'm pointing it to you today that we are aware. So if we begin to take action, I don't want you to complain. Put your house in order, the commercial banks.
Atipo insists that no corrupt bank or government official will be spared.
This is government money. It is not for your individual pocket. And I persistently say, if you want to be rich, you have to be smart and do business and be rich. You cannot be pocketing government money and be proud that you are rich.
James Deng, manager of the Kenyan Commercial Bank, Nyakron branch in South Sudan, denies his bank helps corrupt officials steal government money and vows that his bank will fully cooperate with the Revenue Authority to improve collection of non-oil revenues.
As KCB South Sudan, we are very clear. We are only having the block account which is given to us by the government, and it's the only one that we are operating. We don't have another account that we can hide. Do we have, we can't even disclose.
Atipo says the tax body will soon introduce an electronic tracking system to stop those who are evading taxes on cargo that comes into the country.
And that is the only way we can reduce the level of diversion. Because what we are talking about is a multi-purpose corruption activity. At times, the cargo arrive in Mombasa and they claim they are destined for South Sudan. So, because they are transit goods, they will not pay duty over there. Then, at the middle of somewhere in Kenya, they disappear. So it means that these cargoes are not destined for South Sudan. They are meant for Kenya. But Kenyans and then the South Sudanese collaborated among themselves. And they say the cargo is destined. When the cargo is coming, it disappears. So South Sudan is losing revenue.
Atipo says the Revenue Authority will make sure that tax collection system in the country is transparent. But say it is up to South Sudanese citizens and their representatives in parliament to hold government officials accountable regarding where the money goes after its collection. Atipu gave all UN agencies in South Sudan a month to instruct their national staff to pay all personal income taxes to the government. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Some South Sudanese women say local media outlets in South Sudan are failing to highlight the challenges facing women across the country. The women say male voices dominate the media, but reporters and editors insist the criticism is not justified. The media owners point out that oftentimes women refuse to be interviewed. Onen Walter Solomon has the story for VOA from Juba.
Women activists made the remarks during a workshop organized by Journalists for Human Rights aimed at helping women improve their lobbying skills. Lucy Gordon, National Coordinator for the Global Media Monitoring Project in Juba, says after 5 years, the project has published its findings and found that women are not fairly represented in South Sudan's media.
Those whom you are seeing on the TV or you see their pictures on the newspaper, are there women and those whose voices are heard on the daily programs of news? Are they women? If they are not there, then they are marginalized.
Emmanuelle Leong is a former iRadio journalist and regularly reported on women's issues. She says she had to convince her editor to agree to cover gender issues.
It's hard to convince the editor. At times you write, then they just kill it. They don't air it. It's like repeating itself. Like you find most of our news, killing, raping, and so forth. So at times it's like, no, this is not new. You find difficulties when you go out for coverage.
Odongo Odoyo, an editor at the Juba Monitor, calls that a misplaced allegation. Odoyo insists the Juba Monitor devotes a considerable amount of space to women's issues and believes most media outlets and journalists have stood with South Sudanese women since the country gained independence.
We have talked of the 35%. We have talked of the 50% they are demanding. We have talked of army plan to curb sexual violence against women. Is this not a little story? Which story do they want us to cover?
Speaking in Arabic, Elias Aldugol, the managing editor of the Arabic newspaper Al-Watan, also denies accusations that women's issues are underrepresented in the media. He says they would have created a women's page in their newspaper, but the economic crisis has made printing and publishing extremely expensive.
It's not true because we are an independent newspaper and we are focusing for this case like rape.
Any news that comes to us here, we print out immediately so that the citizens and the government are aware that people are abusing women. If there is any woman who is willing to write a column on women issues, I commit to allow this column on a weekly basis, either every Saturday or Sunday.
Lucia John is a female journalist who has covered issues affecting women before the conflict erupted in 2013. She blames women for staying silent about the issues that affect them.
The most challenges facing me is the women themselves. Women are not calling. Our most caller or most listeners from men. That means that the men, they are interested on this women issue more than women. Like when we talk about the rape issue, they said that if we talk like this, national security come after us to ask why we are saying this on media houses.
John says at the grassroots level, women openly talk about the challenges they face. But she says if anyone notifies authorities, most women are not willing to speak up. Some women say media houses should take the initiative to educate women about how to increase their visibility in the media. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
A new study finds that investing in clean water and sanitation is an economic and social winner but billions of the world's poorest people still lack access to these key services. From Paris, Lisha Brand has more on the finding from the latest edition of the United Nations World Water Development Report.
Access to safe, affordable, and reliable water and sanitation is considered a basic human right and one of the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals governments have pledged to realize by 2030. But there's a big gap right now between promises and reality. The latest UN World Water Development Report finds myriad groups, including women and sometimes the elderly, can be excluded from what many of us consider basic services. Most have one thing in common, poverty.
Water has not been given the priority in terms of development policy that it should be. If you look at electrification, for instance, energy is seen as big business. It's seen as something that is more or less controlled by the private sector.
Richard Connor is the report's editor-in-chief.
Unfortunately, a lot of government leaders, they're thinking taps and toilets. And they're not seeing the true broader picture.
Connor says the bigger picture is that investing in water and sanitation can bring big returns for governments, for example, in healthcare expenses that are avoided because people are less sick. And it helps people get out of poverty. But for many of the world's poorest, those investments are elusive. The report zeroes in on three broad population groups, the urban and rural poor, as well as refugees and internally displaced people.
In some Saharan Africa, over 60% of the urban population lives in slums. And for the most part, they don't have access to proper water and sanitation services. They can pay from 10 to 20 times more for their water than their affluent neighbors.
Connor says the urban poor fall under the radar because they often don't pay taxes and aren't counted in official records. But the study finds millions of rural poor, including smallholder farmers, also cannot access these basic services, including crucial water supplies during planting and droughts.
We've discovered that if the small farmholders have access to this water for supplemental irrigation, their crops yields will increase by 2 to 3-fold.
The third group, refugees and internally displaced people, are also considered among the world's most vulnerable. But sometimes the presence of international aid means they can have better access to decent water and sanitation than the host communities. In both cases, however, the report finds these inequalities create tensions. Connor says progress is being made in ensuring decent water and sanitation becomes accessible to everyone. But the report's overall message is it's not enough. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials in Bor Town say they lack technicians. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
If you are feeling anxious, what can you do to calm down?
Do what I like to do best, read the Bible, watch movies that would educate me, and then read books as well.
You are in such a kind of situation, you have to calm down. Don't take any action. Just relax, sit down. It can even take you to a situation where you can lay down your ribs to have a relaxation so that at least your memories and your positive thinking will come back to you.
I usually like to listen to music when I'm anxious. I listen to music that will make me feel free.
I encourage myself. Sometimes I put music on. I play, dance alone in my room. And that gives me the excitement to move on because every situation is not permanent. It will change the next day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus, and it's Tuesday. Time for our weekly health segment, and today we are talking about the lack of skilled hospital technicians in Bor Town. Health officials in Jonglei State Capital Bor say they are frustrated as they watch patients suffer and see some of them even die due to shortage of skilled workers. A medical officer at Bor Civil Hospital says it is difficult to find technicians to operate machines at the facility. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
In December last year, a group of South Sudanese women in Australia donated more than a dozen medical machines, including ultrasound, blood analyzer, and eye surgery machines to Bor Civil Hospital. The hospital director, Magonga Luong, confirms the hospital received the equipment last December.
We are not using them at the moment because they're technical. In the hospital, no people that were trained on how to operate the machine. Like now, we had fixed the blood analyzer machine in the lab, but now nobody who is trained on how to operate the blood analyzer machine is in the lab. So the machines are available in the store, so we are not using them because we have no people who know how to operate the machine.
Aside from a lack of medical technicians, Aluong says there are not enough doctors at the hospital.
The major problem is the issue of human resource, especially the skilled doctors. We don't have maybe physicians, we don't have a doctor in OPD, we don't have a doctor, a surgeon that will cover medical wards, surgical wards, and OT.
Aluong says oftentimes the hospital must refer patients to Juba or outside the country for further treatment. Many patients are not transported and eventually die because they cannot afford the cost of transportation to travel to Juba or outside the country. 40-year-old Wang Ring is among the patients who are referred to Juba for an X-ray. Speaking in Dinka, Rick says his relative brought him to Bor Civil Hospital 4 days ago for treatment after he broke his right leg.
We had some fight in Duk where I was wounded in my right leg. I was brought to Bor Hospital, but now the doctors are telling me that the X-ray will be done in Juba. But the problem now is that it is difficult to go to Juba due to the cost of hiring a plane.
Speaking in Dinka, Thong Got says his 17-year-old brother Ayom has chest complications and he too has been referred to Juba for more treatment.
My brother has problems in his chest and the doctor says he will be taken to Juba. So now we are making some preparation to take him to Juba maybe tomorrow.
Aluong says the hospital wants to hire a specialist who can operate the life-saving equipment, but does not have the money to do so.
When you add the title of doctor and you'll be hired, it will require a lot of money. Like the doctor that I told you, he demands a lot. We were even told that he needs $5,000. So not easy to hire.
Samuel Majur, Director General of the Jonglei State Health Ministry, says additional training of medical staff is being planned for the future.
We want to conduct a training in our state so that we can train personnel who are able to run this machine. So this is the challenge that we have here.
Majur says a state official plan to request the National Health Ministry to send at least one doctor to train personnel to operate the machines in Bor. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we go to Nairobi, where United Nations officials say countries around the world are laying the groundwork to initiate policy changes to tackle a global crisis of plastic pollution. At a major meeting on the environment in Nairobi recently, member states agreed to cut single-use plastic use by 2030. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
After 5 days of talks in the Kenyan capital, environment ministers from more than 170 countries delivered a bold blueprint for change. Siim Kiisler is Estonia's environment minister and president of the 4th UN Environment Assembly.
I believe that this is the most ambitious declaration from UNEA, and there will be good results to build on. On single-use plastics products, as far as I know, it's the first universal commitment. So I am really happy for this.
He says the world is at a crossroads, but countries have decided to do things differently, from reducing dependence on single-use plastics to placing sustainability at the heart of future development. The ministers pledged to address environmental challenges with innovative solutions.
We need international commitments because waste disposal, marine littering, transboundary impact of lacking of sound waste management systems. It's an international problem. It cannot be dealt domestically. I hope that every minister, when they go back home, they don't forget about the commitment made here.
Some 4,700 delegates, including environment ministers, scientists, academics, business leaders and environmental campaigners, met in Nairobi on 11th through 15th of March for the UN Assembly, the world's top environmental body whose decisions will set the global agenda, notably ahead of the UN Climate Action Summit in September. Joyce Msuya is the UN Environment's Acting Executive Director.
Finding common ground is not simple. It's the product of cooperation, conversations, and compromise. The climate is warming, species are going extinct, natural resources are being wasted, and many of our ecosystems are under enormous stress.
As evidence mounts of the devastating effects of human activity on the health of the planet, a global clamor for swift action is rising. But campaigners said government's commitment on curbing plastic failed to urgently confront the ever-growing pollution crisis threatening the world's waterways, ecosystems, and health. Outside the UN complex, hundreds of students took to the streets as part of a global protest movement to pressure governments to act. Rebecca Freitag, a youth delegate from Germany, supported the protest call.
An issue that my generation is very much worried about is the plastic pollution. We have plastics everywhere. 80% of the plastic goes into the environment and will stay there forever.
Experts say an average of 8 million tons of plastic waste ends up in the world's ocean every year. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The death toll from Cyclone Idai in three countries is expected to increase in three African countries as rescue workers reach areas cut off by flooding. While Mozambique reported 84 deaths, President Filipe Nyusu says more than 1,000 people may die and another 100,000 are under threat from the flooding. Malawi has at least 56 deaths and says almost 83,000 people are displaced. Adigondo has more from Zimbabwe, where 89 people died.
As in the other affected countries, Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has appealed for donations for victims.
To that end, I appeal to all communities and the interests in our nation and to all our development partners and the well-wishers to give a hand and to come forward with whatever forms of assistance they command and can mobilize in order to complement government efforts.
The threat of waterborne diseases and related epidemics looms large. Affected communities are still inaccessible for help. School teacher Simba Machikanga is one of the many currently marooned in Chimanimani.
The situation right now is tragic because right now people haven't yet got any aid. The helicopters actually passed through my area going to the most affected places, but they weren't carrying any sort of aid in the form of food or medical assistance. That people haven't yet received any food.
Officials say the weather is still hampering visibility, making air operations virtually impossible. Government officials say the country's civil protection unit is leading efforts to rescue and mitigate the situation on the ground, with the military clearing roads and making detours. Government spokesperson Nick Mangwana explains.
Now it means that we can get some aid through because the convoy that we had was stuck in this place, the convoy which was full of aid, medication, food and other supplies and provisions. I think that's the primary need.
He says all efforts are being channeled towards saving lives.
Issues of quantum are not important when we have people that are still not buried, when we have people that are still in a bad place, people that haven't been found.
The center of the cyclone wrought havoc in the eastern side of the country and also affected the southwest before moving toward the northeast, where the expert Julie Gwenzi with the University of Zimbabwe explains.
The moment it hit land, it was met with resistance because now we've got vegetation. We had all those mountains as well. They just provide friction to it. Then it started weakening. And right now, Idai is dissipated. We are no longer talking about a cyclone. But what we are actually now having to deal with are the after effects of Cyclone Idai, the flooded areas, the homesteads that have been destroyed.
Mnangagwa flew out this morning in a military helicopter to survey the damage. Opposition leader Nelson Chamisa says the government needs to work on disaster preparedness, saying the situation shows that the civil protection unit is ill-equipped to deal with such a catastrophe. On a positive note, Zimbabweans from all walks of life are coming together to assist with donations of needed materials. Getting them to the affected areas is the crucial challenge. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
The United Nations and international aid agencies are rushing food, medicine, and other emergency relief supplies to hundreds of survivors of Tropical Cyclone Idai, which struck Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
Aid agencies say the full horror and impact of this cyclone, the worst to hit East Southern Africa in nearly a decade, will only emerge in the coming days. Many areas of Mozambique remain cut off because of the floodwaters. This makes it difficult to provide assistance to the victims and to fully assess the damage and needs. There are no accurate figures on the number killed, but Mozambique's president said it would be as high as 1,000. A team from the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society reached the Mozambican city of Beira on Monday. It describes the damage as massive and horrifying. It reports 90% of the buildings have been damaged or destroyed. IFRC spokesman Matthew Cochran says extensive flooding is causing enormous distress. He says the flooding in some parts is as deep as 6 meters, covering roofs, palm trees, and telephone poles.
The reports from the assessment that went out yesterday, which was government, UN, were that people were huddled on rooftops, huddled in trees, desperately looking for someone to come and support them. Obviously, search and rescue is the major priority, but soon after that is shelter. Again, 400,000 people at least have been displaced or made homeless.
The Red Cross is issuing a $10 million flash appeal for emergency aid to the cyclone victims. The World Food Program reports it is rushing food and other assistance to large numbers of desperate people stranded by the rapidly rising floodwaters in Mozambique. It says the humanitarian emergency is getting bigger by the hour. The UN Children's Fund also is issuing a flash appeal for $23 million to help many of the 260,000 children affected by the disaster. The World Health Organization warns of looming waterborne diseases such as typhoid, cholera, diarrhea, and malaria from stagnant water. WHO says it is sending emergency kits, trauma kits, and cholera kits to take care of the immediate health needs of the people on the ground. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a song by Jay Martins and Fally Ipupa.
Jay Martins, fit Fally Ipupa, the couple of members.
We have been listening to Jay Martins and Fally Ipupa with that song of theirs. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for inviting us into your homes and vehicles. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.